Hey, it's Karen Hunter from the Karen Hunter Show on SiriusXM Urban View. Here's a highlight from today's show.
Joining me is a gentleman that I love following on Twitter because he always has these amazing videos where he makes things just so simple. You can just understand all of the things that are happening politically because he's doing the work. All right, so let me welcome to the show. He is a former chair of the Ohio Democratic Party. He's also the author of Saving Democracy, a User's Manual for Every American. Let me welcome the one and only David Pepper. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back. And by the way, I am so impressed you got that Wordle today.
Oh,
no one in my family got it.
Let me tell you.
I thought you got it after six.
Well, I have a process of my first word is bread. And a couple of months ago, bread was the word, right? So I contemplated. So I used bread, slick, pouty. Those are my first three words because that covers all of the vowels, most of the great consonants. You're going to get everything, including the Y, with those three. Now, I stayed with bread because you got the E and the A and the R and the D. So I'm going to just keep it, even though I know it's never going to be the word again.
Right.
And so process of elimination, once you realize, okay, only this letter's popping up, and then I use my next, and only one letter popped up again. And then, so by the time I got to five, there was only one word that I could spell. And I was nervous about spelling it because I was like, right, this word is tricky. You know the tricky words that have
absolutely
things that it shouldn't have in it. And it was the worst. I was like, whew, this would have been
that was a tough one.
Yeah, it would have been my first defeat.
Every morning you set the standard for me. You post it, and I'm always, my family and I go back and forth. So you nailed it, and we all failed. It was a tough one.
Well, let me just say this as somebody that has dabbled in words since a little tyke and played Scrabble with adults that were not nice. My word game is undefeated, and I say it like I could probably be in a tournament right now somewhere, but I'm on the radio. I could probably make my money doing words somewhere, but I'm here, David. So thank you, you inspire me because I post also. So if I'm ever kidnapped and you don't see the post, you know that, and if somebody does, you know, try to impersonate me, you know,
right.
Somebody takes over my account, you know what happened. You know that's not me.
Right.
Let me start here with you because there's been a lot of back and forth, people coming out the woodwork. You know, we're heading into an election cycle again. Folk are, you know, let's withhold our vote. Let's, you know, let's put the Democratic Party on its ass. Why do we just give the Democratic Party our vote as black people? 96% of us vote Democrat because we're sheep apparently and stupid. Why are you a Democrat?
You know, it's funny, when I first started out, I was not all that partisan. I just thought of this as public service, but my instincts were always with Democrats. And now I think it's pretty obvious, more clear cut than when I was a young kid, like 25, 30 years ago starting. You know, right now, the Democrats are the ones fighting to preserve our democracy and to make sure every vote's counted and to make sure that although flawed in many ways and certainly not going for broke in ways that I wish we were a lot of times, I think in the end, we're the ones trying to help everyday people do better in life versus the other side, which I think at this point is, for the most part, in a full out, you know, push for what would no longer be a democracy if they succeed. So I think it's pretty stark. And there've been elections in the past where people would say, oh, they kind of stand for the same thing. And what's the difference? So why vote? Or let's vote for Nader. I don't see how you can, right? I mean, that was sort of the talk. Right now it's, democracy is on the line at all levels. And if we go the wrong way for one or two elections, you and I may spend the rest of our lives trying to figure out how we ever get it back. And we probably won't get it back. So it's that stark. And then to me, that's right now. And everything flows from that. You know, once you have non-democracy and autocracy, then you have the ability for extremists to do whatever they want to the rest of us, undermining the rights of everybody. And we can't stop it. So all the issues flow from whether or not you have a system of democracy and a basic rule of law that you can protect rights and protect democracy. So it translates very quickly to everyday lives, even if the democracy part feels a little sort of 30,000 feet or something.
Yeah, I don't think many of us know what democracy is. And because every 2 to 4 years we're being told this is the most important election of our time, there's a little Chicken Little going around, right? So where people are like, y'all just trying to get us to come out and vote because you need, in our case, black people. Without black people, there's no Democratic Party, period. You don't win anything. So our little 13% makes the difference. And if we don't vote, but it's at the same time, and then some would say, well, we lived through Jim Crow. You know, when we didn't have voting rights, you know, what did we do before voting rights? Y'all keep your voting rights. And let me just say this, David, to be honest with you, it is wildly frustrating to watch, knowing how much power we hold, to not gain more, you know, and also to watch the abject ignorance that is so pervasive. Like, there's a whole conversation around reparations. But not many people are saying the president, even if he promises, can't give you reparations. That's a congressional act. So you got to make sure that your lawmaker, the person you send to Washington, is on board with even studying and then doling out and coming up with a plan. But then you're also going to run into the Republicans in Congress that will never go for it at this point. So that means either you're going to have a party linkage strategy where you hit these places with your candidates running as Republicans the way they did in our districts and suppress votes. Or you're gonna, you know, have to do something. But this is a wild time that we're in, and I'm frustrated.
I actually love coming on your show. I really enjoy our conversations. And one thing I would say that not only do we have to go for broke more, and I think the biggest, since we talked, the biggest disappointment I have is that they never found a way, and they kind of blew it at the beginning, to do a 2021-22 version of the Voting Rights Act. Massive lost opportunity. They should have said at the very beginning to Joe Manchin, you're not getting anything unless we protect voters in states and stop this gerrymandering in states. No infrastructure, no nothing. And because I don't think they saw the threat to democracy as clearly as maybe they do now, they let the horse out of the barn.
Hold on, David. We just had 4 years of Trump. How could they not see the threat?
But if you had seen it as clearly as I think you and I seen it, you would have said, by far the most important thing that you could have accomplished when you had the Senate, the House, the presidency, by far, nothing else is close, is protecting voting rights in states and stopping the slicing and dicing of districts like they're doing in large urban cities in the South right now, cutting Nashville three ways, dividing up black communities to keep their majorities.
Mississippi, Texas, it's called cracking and packing,
right? And now
we're going
to see the Supreme Court destroy the last protection against gerrymandering, which you weren't supposed to be dividing up black communities like they are now going to get away with. Failing to act on that, I mean, I will for the rest of my life. Now, if we win back in 24, which we can, we should all say, that's the first thing you're doing. Nothing else matters if you win it back. If that doesn't happen, you and I will spend years regretting that when they had the power, they didn't do that. The one other thing I'd say about, and I go through this in my book, and I'm channeling a lot of what Stacey Abrams has said for years. If people have decided for understandable reasons that voting doesn't make a difference in their life, that they haven't seen that change, that maybe they voted 15 years ago and nothing ever came of it, you're never going to convince people that they're wrong if all you do is knock on their door with 2 weeks to go, say, oh my God, it's the biggest election ever. Make sure you vote. That actually might even reconfirm for them that this is nothing but a transaction for these people. This isn't meaningful. This isn't about me. It's about you. So I go through in the book all the ways we have to have a much longer conversation with voters, particularly black voters, at the community-based level, at the precinct organizing level. So long before that frantic knock on the door with 2 weeks to go, we've actually had a conversation throughout that shows that this is not just about some candidate desperately trying to win and scare you into voting, but it actually is more meaningful. It's actually a two-way conversation, et cetera. We continue to treat people who've stopped voting for whatever reason as if they just need a reminder of the date instead of, no, this, we know why, you know, you haven't felt enough change. You've probably seen again and again that when you did vote, nothing much changed. Mm-hmm. Let's have a much longer, meaningful conversation. And one of the things I put in the book, and I'll stop talking, I don't mean to talk for so long, is oftentimes the best messenger of that is not going to even be the political party or the candidate. It's going to be empower community level groups who are actually the ones serving folks in other ways to say, oh, by the way, let's also get you back engaged in democracy because it can make a difference. So I think we really approach disengaged and maybe voters who've decided it doesn't matter for them in a very sort of transactional last minute way that does nothing to change the fact that some aren't voting.
Well, there's 100 million people that sat out the last election. So that seems to be a tremendous opportunity. And how about if you're a Democrat, stop trying to go after Joe Sixpack or Joe the plumber, who's never going to vote for you ever, because he's more wedded to the idealism of whiteness than he is any kind of thought of democracy or any kind of, I mean, because if we're being honest, white folks haven't been served by this system either. Okay. At all. Period. Right. You're worse off not because of the Mexicans and the black people. You're worse off because of your political choices. 866-801-8255. But you like your whiteness. So hold on to that while you lose your teeth. David Pepper is here. David Pepper, his book is called Saving Democracy, A User's Manual for Every American. I want to try to figure out, David, how, you know, because I keep saying there, if you have an agenda, how do you get the agenda? Because you just said, Joe Biden, the Biden administration did not do what it needed to do with voting rights. Who was supposed to make them? Whose responsibility is it to make the incoming party, the incoming leadership do the things that we, the people, demand? Who's responsible?
I think, you know, and this is John Meacham, who wrote the biography on John Lewis, says and said, you know, every major piece of progress, although the politicians get the credit, you know, Lyndon B. Johnson or the senators who did the Voting Rights Act, all of that was after years of advocacy to make them do that. That wasn't just sort of something from on high. And so I do think we often, and I do this too, you know, I will point out the million ways that the Republican state houses are doing terrible things. But to push ourselves over to great progress, I mean, advocating to those that generally we agree with is also really important, because we need, I think, often them to fight harder, for them to at moments get uncomfortable, like not just letting people walk away from a filibuster, but if they want a filibuster, you make them do it for days at a time until they're tired. You know, be a little uncomfortable. And I think it's going to take us to say, just like we cheered on the two Justins in Tennessee for standing up, for us to say to U.S. senators and Congress people, that's what we expect from you as well. We expect a real fight. We expect moments of discomfort. We expect some real inspiration and some speech that shows that you understand that this is a real battle and it's not as civil as maybe you are on other days. And so I think us pushing our own folks that we agree with, that we want to see that fight, and we want to see it specifically through certain bills to get passed, I think it's really important. It won't happen without that.
Okay,
I mean,
but how does it happen? Okay, so like there's an agenda, you know, whether it's the Asian anti-Asian hate bill. How does that get signed? And there's, you know, the George Floyd Act doesn't. You know, like, who's responsible? And I feel like, do we have a leadership vacuum? Is there a plethora of leaders that aren't doing the job, but they rather be, come to the White House for events, Easter egg rolls and pictures, and aren't asking for things? I'm asking really seriously, like, who has to do this?
So this is going to sound like a simplistic answer. There are a lot of groups actually doing important work, and they are advocating and they try and do this. The theme of this book I've written, it's got to be everybody. It's got to be everyone. And so one of the reasons I wrote this book is people, if you watch Washington and all you hear about are, if you watch the cable news, all you hear about is DOJ investigations and a federal racist in a few states like Georgia and Pennsylvania. And you think that, well, democracy is in the balance because of those investigations and a very small set of federal racists. And so that's the most disempowering message for almost everybody, because they're sitting in their living room watching things fall apart. And unless they're a DOJ lawyer or live in one of the swing areas, they literally are led to believe there's nothing they can do. The theme of my book is, actually democracy is being attacked everywhere. It's in Mississippi. It's in Ohio. It's every state. It's at that state house district that no one's contested for years. It's in the disenfranchisement and purging of voters in Cleveland. And once you realize that, it's really sobering to realize it's right where you are. But the one thing I hope it does is empower you to think, well, this isn't about DOJ or U.S. Senate. This is about my state, my community. And the, what I go through in the book is chapter by chapter, here are all the things you can do about it. And so I guess the answer is, if every single person were to find within them a pro-democracy champion and incorporate that into what they do every day at the school board, making sure there's no one at the state house running unopposed, you know, a whole lot of those Tennessee Republicans have not had an opposition in years. They get reappointed these offices. They haven't done anything to get there, but put their name on a ballot. No one even runs against them. So run against them.
Yep.
You know, sign up to be an elections official if you can. On and on and on. There's so much that can be done. But most people, because they're given this very narrow narrative, well, it's all about a few federal races, they just think they can't do anything. And I think it's the collective people group saying, we're all going to do something more and different in our own lives that actually leads to the change. And the truth is, that's how it's always happened. That's how it's always happened.
Yeah, people get frustrated. You know, going back 30 years, you were saying, you know, there was a time when you could be a Republican. Eisenhower was a Republican. And, you know, one could argue that, you know, he did some good things, Dwight Ike Eisenhower. You know, there was a time when, you know, Republicans stood for some very basic things, you know, and then we had this Southern strategy, and then we had this, you know, the welfare queen and the Willie Horton and the demonization of people under Nixon and flooding people's communities with drugs and then criminalizing them and then making that part of the political process, right? So now we're still fighting out of this, not even understanding the machinations, because this is how evil the systems are. You're running, and I'm going to start a drinking game if you say in my book again, because I got you. No, I got you. I'm like, okay. We're here to have a conversation. People are going to get the book because it's powerful, Saving Democracy. I got you. You're running. Are you running, David, for something?
Your office?
Yes. Ever again?
Oh, I may down the road. I've got young kids, so now is not the time for that.
But, okay. All right. I respect that. All right. Something's happening in Ohio. In August.
Absolutely.
Walk us through. Give us a couple of places where.
Well, in my book, I'm just kidding.
Drink yeah. Hennessy.
Yeah.
Drink
oh,
Hennessy.
Here we go. No. They are literally making an end run against the Constitution. Like, and they know this is basically about abortion access. And this is a big theme that I talk about in my whiteboards a lot. They know that on almost every issue, from banning books to abortion access to crazy gun laws, that they are in the deep minority and that they would lose for the most part when they have an election about their issues. And that's why they're always gerrymandering. That's why they're suppressing the opposition. They realize that they would lose over and over again. And it's got, and often when I say that, people will say, oh, David, that sounds a little crazy. You're accusing of that. Now, you wouldn't say that, but some people who haven't seen all this will say that. Well, this is them actually trying to effectuate it by changing the Ohio Constitution. There is an abortion access referendum for which petitions are now being gathered for November. Ohio is about 59% pro-choice. They know that. So they're rushing to get onto the August ballot an amendment to the Constitution when no one's paying attention because it's August, to raise the threshold to 60% so that abortion one loses in November. They want to basically say, this is rigging the rules, right? Even if you get 59-41, you actually lost in our state. So it's basically them trying to make law about what I always say they're doing. They literally know that they would lose. And here's the other part that's just outrageous. And by the way, so much of what we talk about now is such a reminder. You mentioned Jim Crow, of what the kind of things they did that got to Jim Crow, just breaking their own rules, breaking their own laws, suppressing the other side, lies about voter fraud. In this case, this is how lawless this is. They banned August special elections only months ago, saying they're not democratic and they're too expensive. The Republican State House passed a bill banning August elections. Then these citizens who are out collecting signatures, it looks like they're pretty serious that there'll be a November election. So then these guys have to rush to get the only way they can ahead of that issue. The only chance they have is August. Here's how lawless it is, though. They tried to get the votes to repeal their law banning August elections, but they couldn't get enough votes. So they never revoked that law. They're just demanding an August election when it's actually illegal to have one in Ohio law. It's an illegal election to change the rules to beat to the punch a group of people that simply want the 59% of Ohioans who support abortion access to have it represented in the Ohio Constitution. That's how insane these guys are about not letting the majority of voters, it's just a symbol all over, actually have that majority reflected in laws in Ohio and elsewhere. By the way, this is happening all over the country. This is just one example. They tried this in Arkansas. If it passes here, they'll try it elsewhere. So yeah, in Ohio, we are working feverishly to build up a coalition to defeat this absurd, lawless thing they're trying to do.
Or people can just show up in August and defeat this absurd, lawless thing. Just show up in August, right?
You show up in August, it's done. Like, that's where they're doing it in August. They want to sneak up. So they're saying that it's so important to change the Constitution, it must be 60%, right? Because only things that get that kind of popular support should ever change the Constitution. So, of course, they schedule in August when they know no one's showing up. And, of course, they only need to get 50% to win. So it's just the most unprincipled, deceitful thing. And they're running around saying this is to protect the Constitution from outside money. A billionaire put in $1 million from Illinois to make it all happen. So this is about as blatant as it gets, that they really are seeking a world where the 41% get to tell the other 59% what to do. And I agree with you, though. We're going to crush this thing. That's the goal. Crush it in a way that billionaire decides, I'm never doing that again anywhere, because the people saw through it in Ohio and it's not working.
Well, that's the thing. They don't quit, you know, they couldn't get Obama to be a one-term president. They didn't stop. Mm-mm. They didn't stop, but we're not going to vote now because they're not stopping.
They never.
And so the goal is ultimate power. Is that the goal, Dave? Because I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's happening in Florida, like banning books and all of this, the Roe v. Wade overturn. Like, what is the goal?
The goal really is sort of ultimate, unaccountable, unquestioned power. And they won't stop. And it actually, one thing that I worry about for our side, when they're closer to losing, they fight back harder, okay? They don't stop. They don't quit. They actually fight harder. You know how Wisconsin won that Supreme Court race a couple months ago? That big race that gave Democrats a majority? We had a moment like that in Ohio in November 20. We actually won a third Supreme Court seat, Democrats did, which combined with a chief justice who was a moderate, gave us for the first time in decades an independent Supreme Court. And of course we were excited. Within months, and this happened in North Carolina too, by the way, within months, they changed the rules of how we elect justices. And for the next year and a half, they ignored the rulings, just ignored them, defined them, of that Supreme Court. And then they waited until their new rules kicked in to elect a Republican Supreme Court. And now they're going to follow the rules. But so in Wisconsin, my message is, do not celebrate. The closer they get to losing power, the fiercer, the more lawless they will be. They will run through any basic principle of democracy. They will run through laws, like in this case. They are scared to death of an abortion referendum ending up like it did in Kansas. So they will go back on the very law they passed only months ago. The very people who celebrated the end of August special elections are now all about them. They are breaking their own law, but the closer they get to losing power, they don't only not quit, they charge forward with even more fury. And you know, again, that's our history. That's how Reconstruction led to Jim Crow. They thought they were losing, so they fought back harder. And it's really what we've seen ever since Obama won in 2008. Same thing. They fear they're about to lose, so they get even more and more ferocious in their backlash.
They would have been fine with Hillary. Obama messed them up because his phenotype let them know that the grasp on power is over. And then we start seeing, you know, 2040, it's going to be majority minority. You know, there are these things that are happening that are getting into people's psyche to foment this fear around not mattering. Like they're going to do to us because you know how horrible this country has been to people with melanin, you know, so your fear is that the same thing's going to happen to us if they get into power. When Obama was president for 8 years, it was some of the glorious, most glorious times for businesses. Like y'all, nobody suffered, you know, because Obama was president. You got health care. Y'all same people that voted against your interest in your teeth got health care under this man. The auto industry was saved. I mean, I feel like he didn't do a lot for black people, but black people didn't ask for anything. So let's go. David Pepper's here. He has a book. It's called Saving Democracy. I want to play something for you because we're heading into a presidential election, which is important because of the three branches of government, right? And right now, the Republicans have the House of Representatives, and there are two votes away. Well, maybe one, because Manchin and Sinema are both Republicans with D's next to their name. So that branch, and they got the Supreme Court, right? So if they have the presidency, they're going to run a Boston on us, y'all. So this is an important election, but there are folk out there saying things. So James Van Der Beek, you know him, he's an actor, used to be, I don't think he's been in anything in a while. At least he doesn't look like it. I'm going to play this clip, and I'm going to preface this, David, with saying, I understand where he's coming from. Now, let's talk about it. Play it, Amina.
The Democratic National Committee is saying there will not be a debate to decide the nominee for president. Are you kidding me? There's no debate over an 80-year-old man who, if he lives, will be the oldest sitting president in the history of the country. And if he doesn't live, has a vice president whose approval rating is worse than his. This guy is obviously declining mental faculties. You're putting him up in front of a podium with flashcards telling him who to call on and what the questions are going to be. What about the will of the people? If we don't have a debate, this is not a democracy by the people. It's a democracy by them. Who? Big banks, big business, big tech, big pharma, big government, big whatever. What the hell? How do we have a government? How do we have a democracy if we're letting a small little back room of people make all the important decisions for us? That's not a democracy, and it doesn't work because y'all have been wrong about a lot these last couple of years in that back room. I could be wrong about all this. I could be wrong about the guy being fit for the job. I could be wrong about the other people being right, being legitimate, being crazy. You know what would solve that? A debate.
Now, that sounds a lot like, you know, something you were saying. A small handful of people making decisions we're with, and your whole book is about democracy. David Pepper is here. Saving Democracy, a User's Manual for Every American. James Van Der Beek, today the president tripped over some sandbags. I think somebody's setting him up. He keeps falling and tripping. He is 80. He's 80. He should be somewhere with his grandchildren, pop, and giving advice and being a mentor. Is this the best we could do? And it's too late now, right? It's too late now, but this doesn't help. This does not help that the images of him is doddering and stuttering, which he has done his whole life. So that's not even a case, but that he's old.
Yeah, you know, obviously it's something in the world of social media where people can clip that 1 second stumble and all of a sudden, you know, my brother sent me on TikTok because that's all he sees. It's even worse. It gets all exaggerated. You know, I think in the end, as you said, he's the candidate, he's the incumbent. I think he's got to run on what has actually been, in the end, a pretty long winning streak of some pretty major issues. We mentioned the thing that I'm frustrated didn't get done. There's a whole lot that did.
Why aren't there people? Because you're fundamentally correct. But at some point, there's got to be some folk to say, you, Dianne Feinstein, freaking Chuck Grassley,
right?
Nancy Pelosi, at some point, Maxine Waters, I'm going to say it. Where are the batons to pass to the new, and I'm talking about 40-year-olds, not 60-year-olds, the baton to somebody that can run this race that you poured all of this amazing knowledge into, that have, you know, vision and focus, that can take the race for this is going to be a tough sell. I'm going to just be honest with you. A lot of people
I got it. I mean, and I do think that one reason that the actually impressive numbers, let's say, the unemployment being down in many different ways and other things that are much better than when Trump was in his final year, I do think the lack of that really savvy communicator every day hurts because no one's selling. And if you had an Obama or a Bill Clinton out there every day, just like confident with a little bit of, you know, a little alpha male out there saying this is what we're doing and kind of making fun of the other
trigger warning,
side.
Trigger warning. I hate that alpha male trope.
Oh, I'm sorry. Like, some guy with some bravado and some confidence saying the way Obama would give these speeches late in campaigns, like saying what he's done and making the other side look kind of silly and just really, powerful stuff. And it's clear we don't have that right now. And I think in some ways they're so careful, they're holding back that from happening. And I think that is one reason we have this disconnect between what is a record you could brag about very effectively and the American people being really, lukewarm at best on what's happening. I do think that kind of energetic defense of the record or attack on the other side is missing. And, you need that in a campaign. So hopefully they can find that because it's needed. And we got spoiled by how good Obama was at this or Clinton as well. I mean, Clinton in his prime was every State of the Union was like, a fun thing to watch.
Yeah.
And by the way, we did see that with Biden, the State of the Union. I mean, he was actually, he had some,
I think the bar was so low that as long as he didn't throw up on himself and trip, we were good.
He worked them over pretty well when they were going after Social Security. That's what you need a little bit more of that gusto. And I don't know what the real, I'm not enough of an insider to know.
Well, you should be on the inside. I'm going to vote and you need to get on the inside, David Pepper. We need you inside because this right now, I feel like we're knocking on the glass and waving and saying, hey, you guys, you're probably going to lose if you don't do certain things and no one's listening. And it's frustrating because we know what's going to happen. We know what's going to happen.
Well, I think you could, if you can translate the good stuff into a more confident presentation, nimble, and take it everywhere. And you got to take it everywhere. You mentioned, Obama got votes all over Ohio. He got the 40% in rural Ohio. No one's got anywhere close to that since because he campaigned there. And like you said, in 2012, they thought he saved the auto industry, so they gave him credit here in Ohio, and he got reelected and won Ohio. See, you've got results like that to brag about now, too, but you got to get out there and make the case and make people feel that. And I do think there's something where they hold back that full-throated, here's what I did, here's what I'm doing, here's how crazy the other side's gotten, so we couldn't let him win. And I think a next generation, is needed to make that kind of case as well. So I hear your frustration, but it is what it is at this point.
I know. I'm tired of the is what it is. It's time.
Yeah.
It's time. It's
I
time.
Agree.
Well, it's time. But it's like, all right, this is it. All right. David Pepper, we're going to stay in touch. You and your whiteboard, besides our friend in California, you have one of the best whiteboards going. And your book, you have a great mission, saving democracy. Who could be against that? A user's manual for every American. Thank you for your work too. I look forward to having more conversations with you.
Awesome. No, I always love staying in touch. I really appreciate it.
David Pepper, y'all follow him at David Pepper. That's real easy. Like the spice.
Hey, this is Karen Hunter. You can listen to The Karen Hunter Show live every Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. East on SiriusXM Urban View Channel 126 or anytime on the SiriusXM app.